You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Televi, and joining me in studio tonight are Joseph Boucher from JM Boucher Investments and Rikus Reardas from PSG Wealth Santon. If you'd like to send questions, please do. You can SMS us 41392. You can email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rikus, Joseph, nice to see you both this evening. Joseph, not a bad start to the week for us, but I imagine it was deathly quiet out there, what with US and UK markets being closed today and the JSE managing a gain of all of 10%. 0.1%.
So certainly, I think in the absence of news and trades from the developed markets, which is the UK and the States, nothing really was happening. I think South Africa is just waiting for the president tomorrow. We have had already a very bad month. You know, the adage, you know, sell in May, come back sometime, has been, kind of holding true. So the market is down almost 7% for the month, about 6% for the month of May. So I think after tomorrow, hopefully the president will be able to announce his cabinet. The market might start, getting direction.
From the cabinet announcements? That's wishful thinking.
It is. But I think people say, obviously people need certainty as to who is going to come, who is going to drive. And the key guy here is possibly Mr. Tito Mboweni, because as we said last time, he's got nothing to lose, and I think he just wants the country to work so he can do his cooking.
Yes. It would be very wishful thinking indeed that the market was up 10% today. My decimal points are a little bit screwy on a Monday morning, I have to say. But Rikus, Joseph makes a point that May has been a terrible month for us, and we were looking so good. We'd had this incredible quarter, one of the best performances since 2009, and we've handed more than half of that back. What do you think the market is looking for in order to find its footing at the moment?
Trump to stop tweeting, I think, because I think that was one of the things. He's been visiting Japan. He was probably traveling, which is why there was no tweets from him. And guess what? Nothing happened on the market. We had a fairly quiet day on Friday on U.S. markets. Obviously, we closed U.K. and America, but there was nothing really globally happening either. And really, to me, it seems like every evening, everybody's waiting for what Trump is going to say next and how that affects what's happening between China and America, which is the big driver at the moment. Apart from that, obviously, we've had the EU and their elections, and that, I think, went down okay-ish, sort of as expected, so there was no surprise there.
No, it seemed to be more of a sort of a centrist pro-EU
that's right,
support
I think,
that came out of those elections.
Apart from Italy.
Always got to have an outlier.
Always have to have Italy. But yeah, I think people got a bit of a fright seeing what is happening with the UK and Brexit. And they just said, well, let's rather keep what we, or better the devil and let's stay with this whole centrist thing.
Yeah. Well, there were some company results to chew over, and one of them was Telkom, and you just had the interview with Sipho Maseko, the CEO of Telkom. Extraordinary performance, and the share price today, I guess, was partly indicative of that, but I also wonder if it was the surprise of the shorts who got caught out by such good numbers. Joseph, I mean, the share price was up 12% at one point. Didn't close there, though.
Well, I think I want to make it as my stock pick for today, but certainly I think massively surprising. The whole issue, really, what has driven the share price over the last few months or so, has the fact that they want to divest from their property portfolio. And I'm just worried that I think as investors, it's particular in at these levels, they don't get carried away, purely because you might end up getting Tongaat or EACI. That had huge property portfolios, and they tried to sell those property portfolios to shove up their balance sheets and certainly give shareholders a bit of some dividends. But certainly stellar performance, and I think the momentum is there, and they've done very well.
Mm. Rikus, do you think there was a bit of short covering? And maybe 4% is a reasonable level for the shares to close up, or do you think it's a little bit overdone, especially if you look at that trajectory, because it's just been one way and up?
I think that initial move, I won't be surprised if there was some short covering, but the price has broken to a new high. As Joseph said, the momentum is behind it. Obviously, there's lots of expectations built in around the property portfolio, and they've been gaining on their, their cell phone digital offering, but one must keep in mind that landlines are still a big part of their business, and that is and that keeps on declining. So one should be very careful that the optimism doesn't blot out the real issues that the company is dealing with.
Although, do you think maybe because it's telecom, there's too much pessimism attached to it? Certainly, I think I'm maybe more pessimistic than I ought to. You know, you have this sort of baked-in notion that telecom, it's a declining business, yet fixed line, but you don't give them maybe credit for doing the good things well.
Well, personally, I totally plead guilty to that bias, which is why I wasn't in it. And looking back, wow, wish I was.
Yeah.
Well, they've increased their mobile subscribers by about 9.7 million. So that's massive, really. And it would be very interesting to see, obviously, where the numbers are coming from. But that's massive to be able to increase that. And I'm not quite sure whether they might also be taking advantage, because I think Cell C has been betting on whether people are certainly switching. They did a rebrand from ATA, you know, from a mobile perspective. But I think after their relationship with KTM, was it KTM from North Korea or South Korea?
Going back a few years, Joseph.
Yeah. You know, people were really just negative about government, what they're going to do. So when Ms. Maseko came in, the first thing usual every CEO does is cut costs and impair a few things.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, he's just selling the properties.
Mm. Okay, so more levers to tweak, I guess, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving away from Telkom to Aspen. And it was disappointing to see Aspen go the other way. It was down 4.5% today. And the question is, Aspen's cleared the final hurdle in terms of selling its milk business, but since the announcement, it's fallen 10%. Is it time to cut and move on? Because, Aspen, we moved back up to, 110 Rand or thereabouts?
Mm-hmm.
And the business and the share did rally on the confirmation that it had got New Zealand government approval to sell the milk business. And then since then, just as you can see that little blip in the chart there, but we're downhill.
Yeah, I think just technically it was sort of testing that sort of 110 Rand upside, and possibly now it's going to test the sort of 90 Rand downside. So I think a lot of the news about the sale, you know, is now confirmed, and there was relief on that. But its balance sheet problems remains, its debt problem remains, although relieved, that doesn't mean it's gone. So again, it's similar to quite a number of companies that are sitting with that problem where cash flow needs to cover short-term debt. And that question is still there. So I don't think there's the feeling that there's a big turnaround in their fortunes, just that some of the bad news has been relieved, I can call it that.
Joseph, what would you do? Would you cut your losses, if indeed you've had losses, or if you're just not seeing any kind of, as Rika says, the upper sort of bracket is 110 Rand, just doesn't seem to be able to get past that level.
I think this share is a problem child for many portfolio managers, really. So if you had bought it around 300, around 400, you're not quite sure whether to just ride the wave and say, listen, let me just sit and hope that it will get back again to about 300. But that's a nasty chart, as you said earlier on. Now, there is history, you know, that certain of these companies basically that have got a very bad capital structure, in particular massive debt, they will fail to rise up again. So the debt level is almost equal to the market cap. I think possibly the market cap is even lower now. Now, also one of the things they've done, you know, to be able to, excite investors and get rid of the debt levels is to sell their best products. The nutritional food.
Well, Stephen Sard will say that it's not the best product. He said that they couldn't really make the margins that they wanted to out of the milk business, and they got a higher price for it than what they paid for it, so it was a good deal, and it's time to move on.
But I think the first, sale was exactly that, you know, which was a business possibly. We think that was one of their best brands that was performing as well. Now, you sell that, obviously, where you get a good price so that you can reduce your debt, but your earnings, where are they going to come from, you know, that is the case? So really, we understand it could have got more money out of it to just be able to reduce debt and make some few shareholders happy, but he still needs to look for earnings going forward, and I think there might be a chance that the earnings will fall. And if you bought the share price, the share, like 800 or 110, my view is to sell it.
Okay. And then the second question from this viewer is, secondly, when is Brait going to fire John Nodder? So clearly an unhappy Brait shareholder. I mean, this is quite a, you know, not unreasonable to ask, given the value destruction that has taken place at Brait. Okay, yes, new look. I don't know if you could say that they were unlucky or if it was a lemon from that get-go. Didn't seem to be, but lots of money has been lost.
It seems to be CEO firing season. So looking at what's been happening. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know who you can, or whether you can put anybody in place that's going to deal with the structural problem that is Brait. In other words, what do you, those things which are still valued that hasn't been written down to zero, are they valued at a reasonable price considering where they are invested? And I think the answer is sort of in the share price. People don't think that way. And I don't know whether a CEO can really affect anything else, but you know, it's an investment holding company, so they can't go and run the business. The only thing they can do is say, well, what's a fair value? And do you really want to fire somebody because of that? That's just off the top of my head. Not that I really follow the company at the moment.
I mean, so, you know, one of the issues is Brait came out of the trading update and they talked about the decline in their net asset value. And there seemed to be, you know, the headlines were, net asset value has fallen, what was it, about 25% or thereabouts. But the point is that the net asset value is still trading way above where the shares are on the market at the moment. Yes. So do you say, okay, well, someone's getting it wrong here, and therefore we buy the shares, or should the net asset, does the net asset value follow kind of is the market price of the stock telling us where the net asset value should be?
There's a possibility, actually, because a lot of distortions, actually, in particular in our market, you know, with some of the companies where there's a massive disjoint, it doesn't matter what valuation you're looking at, whether it's price to book, you need to be able to look at it in terms of, in totality. Now, in terms of firing the CEO, okay, the best person to ask is Donald Trump. You know, go to The Apprentice and you just say, you are fired.
But on
a serious note, I think Brait is going to struggle. Remember the share price went to about 170 rand. They were known to be doing very good private equity deals, that is 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And 10 years ago is a long time. I think they did their deals in Virgin. I think they knew, look, that's the last thing they did, really, in terms of being able to excite investors. But if I were an investor, I would sit and stay out of Brait.
Yeah. Bearing in mind also that they're not private equity anymore. They're an investment holding company, and there was the big transition. Yeah. And it was actually, maybe you could say, in the transition from a private equity company to an investment holding company was when the wheels fell off.
But certainly in terms of the assets they were focusing on, those were assets basically that were either unlisted. So they were, when they became a listed company, they were still focusing, obviously, on trying to extract value from unlisted assets.
Yeah. Okay, so you stay out of Brait. Rickus, I don't know, would you be invested in Brait?
No.
You're not calling for John Nodder's head anytime soon.
As I said, what can they do to affect the running of the operations they are invested in? You know, and if they can't do anything about that, then they're sort of at the mercy of what these things should be trading at, and that depends on what the market thinks.
Does it call into question, maybe a last point, the whole rationale for investing in investment holding companies? I don't know if that's a barbed question at you because you are with PSG. Maybe I should ask Joseph what he thinks about that.
Well, I don't think it is. I mean, I'm an investment or a wealth manager. I invest in companies without actually having to do the job of actually running the business. So my clients or people who invest in me as an investment manager trust my ability to create value by making judicious calls. At the moment, Brait is sitting with a bunch of not so very good perceived assets, and they can't, you know, they can go and sell and maybe change things, but then you're not sitting with the Brait that you know right now. Then you're sitting, the only thing you're sitting with is the trust that in the future the manager will make better decisions, but they'll have to sell something in order to do that.
Yeah. Joseph, we'll get your thoughts on investment companies after the break, if you don't mind. And if you'd like to send us questions, please do SMS us 41392 or email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. Welcome back. We will not have a look at the US markets because they are not trading today. UK market was closed, so it was really just the European markets. And European markets, the DAX was up slightly, and the CAC 40 was also up 0.4%. There you go. Still with me in studio are Joseph Boucher from J&M Boucher Investments and Rick Estrades from PSG Wealth Santander. We were talking about investment holding companies, Brait being the culprit and for immense value destruction of the last couple of years. And Rick has made a good point, is that you back a manager to make judicious investment calls on your behalf. You do the same thing with an investment holding company. Joseph, do you like investing in investment holding companies? Because some managers actually feel that, you know, they don't, you know, you could just assemble a similar collection of assets yourself, for example.
Well, from a diversification perspective, the reason why you do that, you know, obviously you're saying here is a pool of assets, you know, and the company is an investment holding company, is some of the path, and you're hoping that they are assisting you, you know, in doing the first due diligence and putting the assets together. That's really what that is there, because you've got PSG, as you were mentioning earlier on, you've got Remgro, for a couple of investment holding companies that are sitting on the JSE. So it provides you with a pool of assets, it provides you with a second voice, if I may put it that way. So if you want to do that, then you're reducing your risk from one particular stock, and you're getting this. So sometimes it does help from a diversification perspective, but should you basically feel that you've got one asset that you understand better, where the management is clear, certainly you can go into that. I think you've seen how Anglo American is responding to the recovery of Amplats and also Kumba. That's one company also that has got that, yeah.
Yeah, you don't really think of Anglo American as an investment holding company in a way. There was a question that came through last week that I see wasn't picked up, and I'm going to mention it now because it said on one of the nights, one of your presenters' stock pick was Sasol. On Wednesday, the share dropped 13%. So how can informed people get it so wrong? I know that what they say is not to be seen as advice, but really this is disturbing. Please explain. Well, look, things can happen out of the blue. So no matter how good your forecasts are, a company can surprise with disturbing news, which was the case in Sasol.
100%. So what happened there is, they've got one of their biggest projects that is in the U.S., Lake Charles, and they'd given guidance in terms of how much they were going to spend to be able to get the project together. Now, no analyst can, foretell how much they're going to do. So they'd overruns, and then they're going to have to spend $4 billion more onto that. So I think what shareholders do then is to say, well, this might mean, my dividends might not be paid or maintained, and there might be more pain to come through. So when that happens, it's a shock, to the market, and the stock sometimes will take a hit on based on that. Mm-hmm. So I think, it might be, I'm not defending ourselves, but it might be very tough to say. It might be very tough to say just because, the share price went down, 13% on the day. How did you get it wrong? Purely because management, sometimes updates us, and we need to do scenarios and assumptions.
Yeah, sometimes management shocks you. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. PSG actually has been kind of underweight Sasol for a long time in some of their portfolios, if I recall correctly. And I remember last year I spoke at we had a panel discussion where PSG said they were worried about the Lake Charles project, just thought it was going to cost more and do less than people had hoped, and they were spot on.
Yeah,
without blowing hot air up the PSG skirt.
Yes, I can't speak for PSG Asset Management. I can speak for myself, and I think there, but we were thinking the same, and that's just from experience where I've been on about Sasol, saying that capital projects of this nature will most of the time cost more and take longer than you think. What happened last week was the news came out that yes, it was longer and it's going to be more costly than we think. No surprise there. I think what surprised the market was the more that was said in as in we didn't realize it. In other words, so there was this whole shift in trust where people are thinking, okay, these things happened to, wow, wasn't management really in control of this? Mm. And it wasn't the the extra cost per se that caused that huge drop in that specific day. It was a switch in sentiment from, okay, we'll give these guys a chance to no ways.
Yeah.
Again, after you said in February that everything was under control?
Because in February, I mean, even now, February, the project is 96% complete. Yeah. So you think, okay, well, things are on track. And then suddenly there's a cost blowout of $1.1 billion.
That's right. And obviously people say, well, here's a surprise that we didn't think about. And actually, management, in a certain sense, saying that we are investigating as to how this actually happened. And secondly, you're also thinking, okay, so the project's complete. What about the running in costs? In other words, because nothing, you don't finish a project and everything works. There's going to be trouble going ahead. Now, if they couldn't control the cost aspect in the building of it, are they going to control it in the running? So all of a sudden, sentiment has changed. The price takes a big knock in one day. It takes a while for that to recover. And let's face it, markets are most of the time driven on sentiment as much as they as it is on valuation.
Yeah. Just maybe a last point about Sasol. Sasol has, I know over the last few years, you consistently see certain analysts saying Sasol has always been poor at capital allocation. I mean, can companies, you have companies that seem to be poor at capital allocation and they don't seem to be able to get it right. Is it just sort of baked into their DNA that they're bad at spending money? Well, or spending the wrong kind of money on the right kind of money on the wrong assets?
So it's possible. I mean, I also don't want to blow my own horn. In February, I should say it's a sale when it was, I think, about 384 and so on. I think the biggest problem with this, these are not small projects. These are huge projects, and the management must be massive. So this is almost like Kusile and Modupi. You know, I mean, those projects for Eskom, they've been going on forever. So there is, you know, that truth possibly, you know, in terms of, you know, giving guidance and failing to be able to do the capital management. I think for me, for Sasol, they've got joint CEOs. They should be paying more attention, you know, in terms of what, you know, guidance they give to analysts and how they value this.
Yeah. Okay, well, talking about some of the other companies that came out with results and news today. There was a trading update from Finbond and there was results from Reunert. Do you look at either of those shares?
Yeah, I look at Reunert.
I mean, Reunert seemed to do okay. So they sort of exposed all the worst parts of the South African market. I don't know if there are any good parts of the South African economy, but, you know, they've got cabling. Yeah. They're exposed to work that Eskom does and municipalities. It's been very slow there. And yet they managed to grow earnings and revenues.
Yeah, specifically on the cabling side, they were subject to all the problems that other companies that in that sort of heavy engineering sector that's partly dependent on government has been, has had trouble with. So no surprises there. There was no huge losses, but no huge growth there. There's sort of more, shall we call it, innovative engineering in the form of underground radars and defense spending did pretty well. That kind of project is a bit lumpy, but it's also a good thing as far as Reunert is concerned. They've got that technical sort of almost intelligent asset on the one side. The other side is the real sort of heavy engineering type of thing. So those things tend to counteract each other sometimes. And they've got still got a heck of a lot of cash after having disinvested from one of their overseas operations, which wasn't getting the return they wanted. So I like that kind of management as well. Sell something if your capital allocation didn't work out correctly.
Yeah. Share code is RLO.
Oh, that's right.
We have to move on to stock picks. Joseph, you've already given the game away. It's Telkom. So even though maybe it's, I mean, I get the sense from you that even though it's you're concerned that it's risen quite a lot, but you would still be prepared to maybe take a few more percent?
That's a really short-term kind of position. I think there's boiling in Telkom as far as I'm concerned. If they are able to maintain the earnings, because if you look in terms of their last report and where they are, you're looking at about more than 20% jump in their earnings, so from about 540 to 722 and so on. So if they do that, then their target price, it could reach 90. If they don't, you know, you're still looking at about 81. So it's really fairly priced, but because momentum and people think they're going to have a bonanza for the Christmas coming with the sale of their land property portfolio, then you can hold it in the short term.
Okay. And Rick, as you're looking at MMI.
Yes, as sort of there's two things to this. First of all, I think SA Inc. shares are cheap. Insurance companies, lots of their value and return is based on their investments. If we do have slightly better going forward, the company will benefit. Secondly, Momentum as a company are in the process of reinventing themselves. They're about a year and a half into the process, on track. There's still a lot of cost to be cut. And if you then take a look at their price to sort of embedded value, it's way below average. So I think there's scope for improvement on the company-specific side. Obviously, if we get the market working in our favour, they'll get a boost from that as well.
And if a company buys back its shares, is that almost a surefire indicator that you should, bearing in mind that, for example, Anglo American bought shares back when it was 500 Rand, so maybe that is an example of why you shouldn't always buy back your shares. I don't know where you sit on that.
Normally, I don't like companies buying back their shares because I think they should return it to shareholders, and the shareholder can go and decide where to get the better return. But I think in the case of where it's fairly obvious that we are sitting with the asset way below market average, and it's not, you know, it's almost as if you're buying your own investments, because half of your value is derived from what you're investing in. It does make sense.
Okay. Rick, Joseph, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Joseph Buescher is from JM Buescher Investments. Rick Reardis is from PSG Wealth Hanton, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. We have to move on to stock picks. Joseph, you've already given the game away. It's Telkom. So even though maybe it's, I mean, I get the sense from you that even though it's you're concerned that it's risen quite a lot, but you would still be prepared to maybe take a few more percent?
That's a really short-term kind of position. I think there's boiling in Telkom as far as I'm concerned. If they are able to maintain the earnings, because if you look in terms of their last report and where they are, you're looking at about more than 20% jump in their earnings, so from about 540 to 722 and so on. So if they do that, then their target price, it could reach 90. If they don't, you know, you're still looking at about 81. So it's really fairly priced, but because momentum and people think they're going to have a bonanza for the Christmas coming with the sale of their lands property portfolio, then you can hold it in the short term.
Okay. And Rick, as you're looking at MMI.
Yes, as sort of there's two things to this. First of all, I think SA Inc. shares are cheap. Insurance companies, lots of their value and return is based on their investments. If we do have slightly better going forward, the company will benefit. Secondly, Momentum as a company are in the process of reinventing themselves. They're about a year and a half into the process, on track. There's still a lot of cost to be cut. And if you then take a look at their price to sort of embedded value, it's way below average. So I think there's scope for improvement on the company-specific side. Obviously, if we get the market working in our favour, they'll get a boost from that as well.
And if a company buys back its shares, is that almost a surefire indicator that you should, bearing in mind that, for example, Anglo American bought shares back when it was 500 Rand, so maybe that is an example of why you shouldn't always buy back your shares. I don't know where you sit on that.
Normally, I don't like companies buying back their shares because I think they should return it to shareholders, and the shareholder can go and decide where to get the better return. But I think in the case of where it's fairly obvious that we are sitting with the asset way below market average, and it's not, you know, it's almost as if you're buying your own investments, because half of your value is derived from what you're investing in. It does make sense.
Okay. Rick, Joseph, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Joseph Buescher is from JM Buescher Investments. Rick Reardis is from PSG Wealth Hanton, and we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.